set.
Okay, I'll call the meeting to order. Welcome everybody to Planning Commission for September 24th, 2025. We'll start with a roll call. We have everybody here except for Vice Chair Patterson and Councilwoman or Commissioner Jorgensen. So we are going to bypass the legislative thought, and I will give a quick prayer, and then we will stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay. Dear Father in Heaven, we are grateful to come together today to spend time working on the public's business, and we ask for guidance and wisdom as we do so. We say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we have one business item today, the final site plan PDO for Porter Lane Estates. Mr. Eggett? Ms. Deweese?
Ms. Deweese on this one.
Okay. Fire away.
So, just a quick synopsis. The applicants, Greg and Troy, are requesting a final site plan approval for the proposed residential subdivision under the plan development overlay. The subject property is located at 522 West, 400 South, Porter Lane, also identified as parcel 03001-0209. For the code requirements and analysis, number one, the final site plan compliance requirements, they have applied, we have deemed them compliant, and they have paid their fees. Subsection E, subsection 2, final site plan application shall include at least the following information in subsections CZC 12.21100A through I. So including in these packets, the associated subdivision plat, which was shown one additional parcel. So the best way to think about this and like simplest terms is the actual layout and the use itself did not change. It was just a more of a security measure and a safeguard for the residents who are going to be part of that subdivision in the future. So originally we did not have parcel A, and I might be able to try to zoom in a little bit. Parcel A is the sports court, and we originally did not have that parcelized out, and it was originally part of lot 3 and lot 4. And in previous applications, there could have been disputes for lot 3 and lot 4, maybe not in Centerville, but Mike brought up that in other cities he's seen this. So to alleviate that for the future residents, what we decided on doing is parcelizing out the sports court and making it its own parcel, so then at no point can lot 3 or lot 4 encroach on that in the future. That really is the only deviation from the original approved site plan. The applicants addressed all of the requirements that the Planning Commission recommended that the Planning Commission had terms for in the conceptual site plan. So with that being said, we looked then at the next approval process, and those are the actual standards for approval for the final site plan. And the final site plan, once again, the layout outside of the staff's direction, as noted above, it did not change. We addressed all of the conditions for the approval by the previous city council meeting on August 5th, 2025. After this review of both the proposed conceptual site plan with the flexibility of the PDO and the final site plan, staff is in support of the Porter Lane Estates final site plan submittal, so long as the outstanding DRC comments are addressed. And last meeting was just this Monday. And On the screen, you'll see that the comments for specifically the site plan is lot frontages are incorrect, so lot 3 and lot 4 will need to be changed to correct the lot frontages on the plan set, but that was just due to parcel A being changed and just an engineering slip. And then for the final subdivision, these were the comments that they gave for the final subdivision in the highlighted. I provided those to the applicant as well as the surveyor and the engineering team, and they've already addressed most of these items. They're getting this resolved, and our plan is to get it deemed complete and ideally do our first round of compliance for the subdivision on October 6th and hopefully get it deemed actually in compliance and be able to start working on Mylar for them. So that is where we are at, and that wraps up my report.
Okay, thank you, I appreciate that. So I have some questions for you that I'd like to understand. So parcel A being created as a new parcel is different from the August 5th version, correct?
Yes.
So my question is more along the lines of who owns that, who maintains it, who's going to be in charge of it, and that's going to be the HOA?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And do we need to impose a requirement for
it's
that?
It was updated in their CCNRs.
Okay.
Yeah, it was added as a parcel that is part of their maintenance obligation.
Maybe I missed that in the packet. Sorry.
The CCNRs are pretty slim, I've noticed that, but that's something that the HOA, and I like slim fast, trust me, but, you know, I did notice that, just as commentary.
Yeah, if
there may be things that, you know, you want to address further or get legal advice about, or, you know, just so that some of the vague things are cleared up in there.
Okay.
And then you'll notice, too, it says in Article 1 that there are 7 lots, which is evidencing the parcel A again. But she has it highlighted, the obligation right there.
Do we as a city have any authority to enforce that the common space in this subdivision be maintained appropriately?
No, that wouldn't be our responsibility.
Okay.
No. And even my experience in other cities where we have HOAs has been that it really, to what Commissioner Moss is saying, it really is between the residents and the HOA's operation.
Right. I have seen it where the city can step in to say, hey, if you're not doing it, then we can charge the HOA for doing it.
I mean, right, it's any situation that we are the city. We ultimately look out for the welfare of the residents. I'm sure if somebody came to City Council saw some interest, we could explore what our options were through legal correction. Yeah, typically we don't get into that relationship.
Yeah. Okay, further questions for staff?
I was wondering, are there, like, does the city do any kind of requirements for light, like street lighting in this kind of a parcel?
There are street lights.
I only saw one for the lot A. Mm-hmm. That was it.
So I
hear the street.
I will
on the back.
The city does require that adequate street lighting is a requirement. In terms of who reviews that, we do it at the discretion of the street supervisor,
yeah.
And then
that's
the public
right.
works director does oversee it.
That's
so
right.
In terms of what planning requires, planning doesn't call out for any type of street lighting, but it does get captured underneath of the set review. And then following that, in terms of like shielding, the city is very, very slim on what type of lightings we allow, which is something that I actually have in the updated list of stuff that I want to address. So you hit a good point.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty slim code for the city.
On that point, is that something that you can provide any further advice as to on this particular street, whether we're, you know, whether it would be recommended for further lighting, or you think what's in the packet is sufficient?
Our road supervisor and public works director have said that this is sufficient.
Okay.
Yeah, per our standard.
All right, further questions for staff?
I just saw a few of those highlights, and maybe Cindy already addressed it, but it looked like there was that fire inspection requested on June of 2025. Has that gone forward, or I guess any fire concerns, those have already been addressed as well?
Yeah.
Because it's just a pull-in, pull-out thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which one are you looking at?
This is Exhibit G.
Okay, yes. So that was the unupdated ones from, correct, yes. So this is the one that you have in the exhibits, are the old checklists, and then based on our review from this Monday, it has been addressed.
Oh,
yep,
okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, good clarification. That is good to point out that
yeah.
we did. So we have is the old one, but we did meet with them just as recently as Monday, so there's an updated, corrected. That she's going on.
Yeah, my only other question was on like the irrigation or watering plan wants to defer this to individual property owners once bought. I guess that just means, hey, irrigation, sprinklers, that sort of stuff, the individual homeowners are going to be required.
And typically,
to do that.
We as a city don't get down in the weeds on residential lots anyway, so that is
right.
in conformance
right.
with that.
Yeah. All right, let's proceed to the applicant, if the applicant would like to come to the microphone and respond to any questions or present any additional information for us.
Say that again.
State your name, your position, and add any information you'd like to.
Greg M. Larson and Troy Halser, we're the two developers. I don't have any really comments. I can answer any questions. I think that Sydney's done a great job explaining everything and where we're at. There's been some things that have taken place since the last meeting where we went through some things on the stormwater, and that's all resolved. So I feel like they've been very, very thorough, a little too thorough.
Of course.
But we're glad to be where we're at.
Yeah.
Okay. Questions for the applicant? Thank you.
I'm good.
All right. We are now going to proceed to the public hearing phase. I'll open up
I don't think this one's a public hearing.
Yeah, because we're just doing an administrative.
Yeah.
All right. We are in a public meeting.
Yeah.
And I will proceed forward to any further questions from the commissioners to anybody at this point that is relevant to the question in front
so
of us.
So this is remaining a sports court.
Not about like that. What's
yes.
the purpose of life?
Yeah. Even though like within the exhibit I'm looking at it appears that it's the exact same sort of sideways lines as the road.
It is the opposite. Oh.
Parcel A above
yes.
there, it looks like it's still a road.
Yeah, that is it.
So that middle spot's gonna be the
right. It's not a road though. It's a sport court. It'll be poured as concrete or whatever the appropriate surface is for pickleball use.
Okay.
Yes. So,
okay.
It just
looked like now it was a T. Like
no, that's
a lowercase
it's,
T
it's
going
own.
Up as a road, and I wondered about like if we're remaining a road or we have, but we're not.
No, so I understand why it was crosshatched up that way, and it's because the road is actually part of a PUE. And SAE easement, and then that is included in the easement. But if
what
you
is
look,
an SAE, sorry,
safety access.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
so.
If it's a sport court and there are fences and poles in the way, how does that function as an SAE?
Guys got me on that one.
As long as here's the thing from my perspective. As long as fire is okay with it,
right.
I'm not going to second.
Because that was my thing. We were talking about this being a hammerhead, whatever. And
yeah,
it's,
right.
The hammerhead is not for fire access again. Just to
right.
make
as we found
that
out
multiple
that it's
times.
Going forward and back. End.
That is only for driveway access.
Right.
What you're
driveway
seeing.
Access for lot
right.
five, three,
five
and,
four,
three
and four,
three and two.
Three and four, yeah.
So parcel A should have no, yeah, because they'll back a truck up and then pull it out, as we've discussed in previous meetings,
yeah.
for access. And again, the reason for the sport court being parcel A is otherwise what tends to happen is lot 3 and 4 will start to see an opportunity for that to become their property because
yeah.
they're paying taxes on it.
Yep.
and then they'll start parking their boats or other things on it, and then it'll become their property, and there'll be no way to enforce upon it.
Yep.
So that's why you establish it as a parcel.
A parcel, okay.
To protect it.
Yeah, otherwise, yeah, I'd be moving into lot four and putting my boat in, if I ever owned a boat.
All right, anybody have further questions? Seeing none, I'll proceed to the motion phase. I'll accept a motion.
I'll make a motion for the Planning Commission to approve the proposed final site plan for the property located at 522 West Porter Lane, 400 South, contingent on the following conditions for approval, 1 through 3. And then findings. Due to the following findings for actions 1 through 5.
I have a motion.
I second.
I have a second from Commissioner Jorgensen. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we'll start down here.
Aye.
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 That passes unanimously.
One quick thing I'd say just after, just so you, again, you know, we are still working, obviously, on the final subdivision plat. That is an internal administrative review with the DRC, and ultimately the zoning administrator, which is me, will give the final if and when it meets the requirements of code to do so.
Very good.
At which point, and then we'll do Mylar and bonding and all that. So there is still a little more processing to go on it. But they're 80 to 85% of the way there.
They are like 98%. They're 98%. They're fine.
Don't scrap it.
Don't. Yeah.
No. All right, moving on to the, thank you, Community Development Director's Report.
Thank you. Two items. The first one's a pretty quick item. I was discussing it off the record earlier with some of the planning commissioners, but we are moving forward with a new software within the Community Development Department. It will be hopefully more convenient, more user-friendly, and more progressive for everybody's benefit. Our current software, we basically turn off and are no longer accepting applications. We will start out to accept new applications starting on October 1st. The long-term benefit of it is that we will also move building permitting into the software, which before building permitting was just done in Word documents and Word reporting in old systems. So we actually will now have tracking software that is user-friendly for building permitting in addition to other permitting for business licensing and planning and zoning. So pretty excited about that. It could even do code enforcement reporting and form building at some point. So we're pretty excited. It'll come with a little bit of a learning curve and challenge for the community and even ourselves, but we're working on it. Sydney's done 90-95% of the effort to get there, but
It is a group effort.
She's done a ton of work to get us to a good spot, so we're pretty excited. The other thing I want to note, I did tell you I would give you an update on the water conference that I went to a week ago. So I'll try to, or actually a week and a half ago, so I'll try to give you, I have notes on a notepad at the office and I forgot to bring them with me. So I'm going to have to go off my memory after having presented.
Always
the city
a dangerous
council.
Proposition.
Yeah. So if you want to hear the full report when I was more remembering my information, watch the city council meeting when I came up and reported. So if I missed something, you'll hear it there. But it was really interesting. We are in a challenging drought cycle for the state of Utah. One thing that I thought was really interesting, a key learning fact, is there actually are two periods of water collection in the state of Utah. And a lot of people don't think about that. They think just winter is your only water collection. But monsoon season is a secondary water collection phase, believe it or not. And monsoon season accounts for your intermediary water to keep the soils from being too dry and the plants from being too dry, so they go dormant sooner. And so the state of Utah has, I think there's 4 or 5 water basins, but the one that tracked monsoon season, because there's such a large portion of it, they control access to the Colorado River Basin, and that's the central Utah Water District. They did some programming estimates on monsoon season totals, and their original modeling was showing 22% monsoon season, 22% of normal, monsoon season water coming into the Colorado River Basin. It came in at 2%. So that was pretty tough to hear. What that means is now all the plants, all the natural needs are going to take the water even more willingly and readily and basically take it before water can get into the Colorado River Basin. So what it could mean is even if we got an earlier amount of moisture in the winter, which we hope for, the plants will absorb what they need to before it starts to go into watersheds. And so not good, right? The other reason that you want a lot of water in the winter is so that when the plants come out of dormancy, they don't need to take as much because the soil can be saturated in the water and then it'll go into our watershed. Now, this is interesting. We in the state of Utah, and I guess humans generally use only 5.4% of the water intake that comes every year because of all the natural taking of the water before it can get to the watershed, which is interesting. 5.4% of the water that's accumulated is all we get in our watersheds every year.
And we're trying to do more, I know.
Yeah, trying.
Which and is then, everything.
And we have a taker now because originally about 2 or 3 years ago, there was a lot of discussion about water reuse projects throughout the state of Utah. But then we had another challenge come up, which is the Great Salt Lake, right? So because of the Great Salt Lake Czar and the Great Salt Lake Authority and those moves that have been made over the last 3 years, water use projects can no longer be developed in the state of Utah. So we have even a tighter constraint of how we get and use our water than the state of Utah, right? So you can see how a lot of these water districts start to consider what are our options. We can't go and use gray water reuse. We have to let so much water go out to the Great Salt Lake for the water rights that the Great Salt Lake is entitled to and just for the natural welfare of the community. And then we have all the plants taking our water resource, especially in very lean, drought-heavy years.
So are you saying, like, gray water, like when the South Davis Sewer
It's called consumptive water.
They get the water, refine it, they have to put it into the Great Salt Lake?
Well, yeah, so now, like, your consumptive water, the idea was, let's say you literally take a drink of water, you pour some out, and it goes down your drain, right? That's consumptive water. Well, that water, there had been some ideas, again, before this Great Salt Lake push to create facilities that would take that consumptive water that's fairly clean,
right.
Refine it, the impurities, and then reuse it at least for irrigation, if not other things, right?
Sure.
You would consume it again, but then it would create a secondary option where you're not taking from the water that you need for other things, right? But that no longer is an option because the Great Salt Lake is so low. Another thing that was interesting is the Colorado River Basin is in a 7-state compact that dates back to, I think it's 1935, if I remember my history right. And California has an eminent right in the lower basin to get, what was it? I want to say it's like 1.4, I can't remember what it is. It's some really high number, but they're entitled to the first dibs on it, guaranteed, before other states can take the water from that lower basin. Now, that doesn't affect Utah as much, but it kind of does because we can only take 27% of the Colorado River Basin water that we receive through our state, and then we have to let the rest go downstream because of how all the water comes into that basin. The reason I tell you about that is you think about that now on a community-by-community basis within the basins themselves, right? We're talking the state, but it's kind of a similar thing where the water districts have to figure out how to divvy up the water that is available. So our, obviously, water basin is Weber Basin water. So what we learn then is if Mother Nature won't provide water like we need her to, then what do, right? And so there's been a lot of discussion about how can communities participate in water conservation efforts and such. So I already alluded to this before I even went to the conference, that I'm being asked to look at doing a water conservation ordinance update. I've drafted with the assistance of some guidance from Weber Basin. It's actually, we have to do either way because the state of Utah did a new bill just this year that talks about adding water conservation policies within your landscaping ordinances. There's 4 required standards that the state of Utah has put in place. Weber Basin's is just a little more intense. And so I put together a draft that currently is being reviewed by Weber Basin and then our city administrator is looking at it. The reason I tell you that obviously is that will be forthcoming as a discussion item and then probably a public hearing consideration and hopefully work its way to the city council for consideration. But I wanted to make sure you understood the gravity at least of what I heard as best I can communicate it to you, that even with a really bad monsoon season, it only exacerbates our drought conditions. And they're hopeful. I mean, the watersheds will carry out this year, but they're getting a little scared about what next spring would look like if we don't get at least a decent, normal type of a winter season. So whatever your, I guess, belief proclivities are, whether it's just hoping for good karma or you pray or whatever your thoughts are, definitely make sure you're putting goodwill towards trying to get some good water for the winter, because we'll need it. So I guess that'd be my report, and that's what I wanted to share.
Was there any conversation in regards to, like you were saying, water conservation within the cities? It's somewhat weird that we have so much water usage on our lawns, and we're in a deserty climate.
Yep.
Whereas you go back east, where they've got a lot of water, no one's watering their yards. I mean, they don't need to, and they have sufficient water. So is there going to be, like, here in 50 years, did they, like, no, not only is no one going to have grass, but you can't, like, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
that is something I actually meant to talk about, too. So the reason that these water basins are trying to push sod removal or other planting ideas isn't necessarily because of the sod. It's because people don't know how to responsibly water their yards with the sod. And so, unfortunately, you have to create programs and incentives to remove the sod. Now, they did say there's a new Bermuda grass that is actually, it doesn't need a lot of water to grow well. And they're doing a lot of, they have a program, it's through Utah Waterways, is I think the group. They are doing programs where they'll go through, you can apply, I think he said they do 6 a year, and they'll look at your yard and they'll actually flip it and do your landscaping for you. And then what you give them is the opportunity for them to highlight, spotlight your yard, showing you before and after, to promote the program on what a converted yard could look like. Wow. But they said that they are planting that Bermuda grass, that low water need Bermuda grass.
Have they ever sat on that Bermuda grass?
it's a new hybrid, so I don't know if maybe the blade isn't as sharp. I don't know.
Kentucky bluegrass in my front yard, and we mowed the lawn today and laid in it, and I was like, oh, this is nice.
I get it. Maybe the hybrid's a little softer. I had the same thought. I don't know.
I want to test it.
I don't know.
You want to test it.
but yeah, and obviously, were we as a city to accept and adopt that code that lines up with Weber Basin water, then residents could qualify for the programs through Weber Basin if they wanted to receive incentive funding to flip their yard, convert their yard. Mm. So that is
cool. And I think our green spaces, we have a lot of grass. You go down to parks, like in Utah County, it's not that way. They've got nice shade structures and splash pads and things of that nature. I mean, our community park, no disrespect, but there's so much grass. There's so many mosquitoes. It's
having
itchy.
Having just been there, though, I will say, like, every night on
you
Wednesday,
see me, I'm in sweats. I have to wear sweats, and it's 90 degrees outside because I'm getting eaten alive by mosquitoes.
Well, and again,
it's being used.
If it's being watered responsibly by the city...
No, but if we just got rid of the little bit of grass.
And I get
a little bit more cement. I'm a big fan of cement.
Be a good,
lovely.
Like your queenie.
So hot, right?
You're lucky Lorraine is not here right now.
Yeah.
She loves cement. Oh.
Urban heating.
Urban heating.
We won't go there.
Phoenix.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Go there.
All right. Anyway, calling the meeting back to order.
Just a question on that, Mike. So, like, if that ordinance or code does get passed, are we going to have to, like, analyze water usage with these applications that come through?
No.
Or is that something that's
the beauty of it. Weber Basin said that we don't have to go out. I'm not going to go out and look at a residential homeowner's yard and say, oh, that's 35%, but that's not, right? We're not going to – the city won't play a role as an enforcer or a czar. But with the ordinance being in place and explaining what the expectation is, hopefully homeowners will either see the opportunity to transition to meet it, or new homeowners, new builders, whatever, will try to meet that code when they do their landscaping the first time. And frankly, there's a more aggressive component that's towards the commercial, industrial, multifamily type developments that may still come forward, right? Especially as we look at the West Side development north of Public Works up to Farmington. If we got a code in place, all that property, which right now is, frankly, borderline wetlands, some of it is wetlands, could maybe continue with a similar landscape, but a curated landscape design that meets that, rather than a bunch of businesses come and say, oh, I'm just going to put sod everywhere because it's cheap and I can, right? And the irony is sod compared to other landscaping methods, really it's about the same amount of money if you really look at it. Again, people don't know any different a lot of the time.
The peat gravel is not that expensive.
So, anyway, yeah.
But currently you have to have 60% green, don't we, in Centerville?
We have 60% impervious surface. I'm trying to think what the ordinance is. I just looked at it the other day. I can't remember, Commissioner Jorgensen, what the exact number is. But it is interesting how it talks about living versus non-living landscaping.
Yeah, I tried to cement my whole backyard and I was not allowed.
Yeah, no, you have to have some. Well, but see, I think it's 50%. I think it's 50%. And what it says is 50% of your yard has to be
lit.
What you probably did is, see, you should have put like drought tolerant plants all around your concrete pad and some gravels, and then you probably would have been okay.
Yeah, but then you got to weed it. There's still my.
All right. With that, let's move forward to the minutes. Yep.
I didn't see any issues.
How detailed are we supposed to be about looking at these minutes?
You're supposed to read them, and if they're accurate, then fine. If
if it reads weird, is that something I should be mentioning?
Yeah, go ahead.
You can.
Just because under, I think it's the third page, conditions, maybe I just don't know how to read or don't understand what it's saying. It says the applicant will need to receive, will serve, / approval by the Davis County Health. I just didn't. Is will serve a thing?
Yeah, it is.
A will
serve
letter.
Called.
Okay.
It's a will serve
letter.
So
I'm just done. Got it.
No, you're fine. It's a term of art, and if you don't understand what a will serve is, that reads weird.
It does read weird.
It does.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we could probably improve that for the uninitiated that read this. We could potentially say a will serve.
Use like more layman's terms just so it's not so.
Well, and it should be capitalized because it's a proper noun. It's capital W, capital S to indicate that it is
an actual document.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be capitalized.
Okay. Good eye, Lane. Good eye.
Thanks.
And that extra space in between will and serve, that's just.
I tell you what.
Oh, now I see actually why it's doing that. It's,
full
it's,
justification.
It's probably justified.
It's justifiable.
Yeah.
Yes. There you go. Yeah.
Continue.
I'm fine with it as written. Does anybody have any strong feelings about modifying it?
No.
Okay.
No, I understand what it is.
Good discussion. Anybody else on the minutes?
I'll make a motion to approve if you're
waiting. I second the motion.
For one.
Okay.
Nice work, guys.
I have a motion.
And a second.
And
normally you say,
tightly on its heels. Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And now I'll take a motion to close.
I'll make a motion to close.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. All in favor.
Aye.
We are done.
Trying to stay.